I'm Mike.
And I'm Allison.
Yeah, Beb. And since I'm talking, I'm going to be the one delivering the story this week.
Yes, you are.
Did you know that?
I did know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, I'd be pretty unprepared right now.
Yeah, well, you're never unprepared, so that's good. I'm excited. This one's going to be interesting. It's got a lot of Chinese names. It's gave you kind of a sneak peek, so I'm going to do my best to say the names and everything. But before we get into that, I wanted to mention, if you enjoy this podcast, if you can give us a five-star review and some kind words on Apple Podcasts, that'd be very much appreciated. We got bombarded with these like three or four reviews of one star, and they're like, you guys talk too much. And it's like, okay, well, fast forward and go ahead and listen to the rest if you'd like, or become a Patreon and go listen to some episodes that have no banter. But if you think the banter's okay, then go ahead and go move over to that Apple Podcast and give us that 5-star review.
Yeah, and we'll try to keep our chit chat to a minimum, but you know, just to come in, like listen for 10 minutes and then just give a 1-star review is what those reviews felt like.
Yeah.
So they really bring our ratings down in a big way. It's always the negative comments and reviews that always stand out the most in so many ways.
Well, yeah.
They hurt more. Like you could get 15 positive things, but you'll always remember that one negative.
And you know what? There's this one dude. He is the one that made fun of me for making fun of the Texas accents.
Okay.
He came back and updated his review. So I know you're still listening, buddy. I know you're still listening to the show. So I appreciate you listening.
Was it additional negative?
It was like, oh, go listen to the True Crime and Coffee Couple, or the Crime and Coffee Couple, is it? Or no, the True Crime Couple.
Okay.
We talk to them too on Instagram. Yeah. They're a great podcast. Go check them out for sure. But he's like, if you want a real true crime experience, I'm like, okay, but you're still listening to us. So it's like if you listen to a radio show and they have people call in and be like, you guys suck. It's like, we suck, but you're listening to us. So.
Right. And bottom line is you can never make 100% of people happy. You're going to drive yourself crazy if you even try to do it. But I'm all about, I want to listen to feedback. I'm very big on that. Even in my work, I've been doing my job for close to 20 years, and I'm always open to feedback, because the day I stop learning and bettering myself is, the day that it's pretty depressing.
Yeah.
So I'm open to feedback, but sometimes the negative ones don't really give much feedback.
Hey, go ahead. And actually, somebody else gave a 5-star review and said, hey, you guys talk too much. It's like, okay, well, you gave us 5 stars and definitely going to, give that.
Yeah,
to
so we could always rein that in a bit.
Yeah. So we'll make sure not to talk a little bit of banter more than 5 minutes or so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to kind of lean into it a little bit. I feel like too cold of an opening is it's kind of no foreplay,
Well, and I guess, you get no personality.
You didn't even react to me saying foreplay.
Well, I guess maybe I'm just used to you, Mike. That's very telling.
You're like, yeah, you know what? That's true. It's just exactly like
I mean, really, it's true.
Yeah. It's like you got to warm up just the pot a little bit, stir the pot. You can't
dive right in.
Yeah. You can't just zap a bowl of soup. It's not going to be as good. You got to warm it up slowly,
mix it
a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. So it's about balance and, trying our best to make people happy.
Absolutely.
That's all we can do.
Yep. And bringing you some good true crime stories. So what's up this week? We got July 4th. Happy July 3rd here in the United States. Independence Day. We're very excited. Our dogs aren't. Lots of fireworks going off while our dog.
Yeah, our little Poppy, she hates thunder and fireworks. So tomorrow is going to be a little rough for her, but we put her in her cage with a sound machine and give her a calming treat, and hopefully she'll get through it with unscathed.
Yeah, the kids call it doggy weed, even though it's not.
No,
it's something on Amazon that we found.
So. Yeah, it's just different herbs, not marijuana.
No. But hey, if it worked, it worked. So she likes it. What was your Amazon addiction this week? You got quite a few deliveries, I would say.
Well, they were mostly for our daughter.
Okay.
But
there's always
an excuse,
folks. There's always an excuse.
Yes, Mike, it is an excuse. They were for our daughter. That's my excuse.
Oh, were those shoes for the daughter?
No.
Okay.
So they're hideous. They're these slides, these sandal slides. And I've seen them before, and I don't know where, but they look like marshmallows, basically. But they are really comfortable. And when I'm home, I'm not about fashion. I'm about comfort.
I mean, let's be honest. You're not really about fashion. Really.
I was just going to say, even when I'm out, I'm not really.
I think you look cool.
This podcast. It's about balancing it.
Right. And I told you yesterday, we were going out to see, or 2 days ago, we went to see the Minions movie with our teenage son who wanted to go see it with his friends. There's some online TikTok thing where they were supposed to wear suits or something.
And there were kids wearing tuxedos.
Yeah. Yeah. And you looked really cute. And I said, hey, you did a good job. And then you went back and put on some makeup. I'm like, whoa, you just keep on getting
I wear makeup to work every day, you jackass.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't see you. You leave at 5 a.m.
So these shoes are very comfortable. I mean, they're like walking on clouds. So if you don't care what your feet look like, per se, but you want to be comfortable, these are the ones for you.
They're the good house shoes.
Yeah, good house shoes. Yeah. Well, okay. So our daughter tried them on and she liked them so much, I got her a pair too.
Okay. That's usually how it goes. You guys are good shopping pairs.
We are. We're good pair.
All right, we're at 5 minutes.
Let's get in.
We're at 5 minutes. Let's do it.
We don't want to piss anybody off.
Yeah, God knows. Jeepers, creepers. So here we go. This episode, this particular story, is about a guy named Zhang Hong. So there's going to be a lot of Asian names here that I'm not an Asian speaker, Chinese.
Oh, I thought you were.
Yeah, believe it or not, you would think that I am because I'm a really smart guy.
But you did a lot of business over in China.
Nope, not yet. So hey, someday, maybe I will.
I hope not.
But Cantonese and all those kind of languages, they're not my strong suit.
I don't want you to be that far away from us.
Yeah, so I'm going to use a lot of like first names here just to kind of try to keep it simple for English-speaking people. And we'll go from here. So this is a story about one of the biggest and most infamous true crime stories in China. But the weird thing is that there's really no information on this like whatsoever in America.
Really?
Well, nothing English-speaking like ever. The only articles are, have you ever done a research on a particular story and you find these articles that are like very broken English?
No, you've had that before.
I have. I don't know why.
The one over in the islands.
Yep.
And actually, when I was looking for a photo for you for that case, you were completely right. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But no, because I've done a couple over in Japan and they were all, you know, translated perfectly fine to English.
Okay. So this one's interesting. You know, I couldn't find a lot, like I said, and to my knowledge, I did a search on Apple Podcasts, and there's never been a podcast that covered this one.
Wow.
So it's kind of weird that such a gigantic country like China, this is the big true crime story over there, like, you know, one of the top 10. And, you know, this would be like a Lori Vallow or something, like something that everybody knows.
Yeah.
That's
interesting that there's not been another podcast done about it in America.
Yep. If you find one, let me know. So I found the story on Reddit, thanks to a user named Moondog151. I mentioned him because I actually had a little chat and said, hey, do you mind if I use your research? He did a fantastic job researching. So
awesome.
I checked out a lot of his sources. I, you know, Googled a lot and it was all the same thing. So he did a great job. Thanks, Moondog. The story takes place in 2012 in China. So Zhang Hong was born in 1968, which would make him about 54 years old today. He owned a rice factory and managed some hotels, some stores, and also invested in areas of tourism industry. So the guy wasn't doing too bad for himself at all. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's a million rice factories in China. He got, you know, a lot of different investments, a lot of different assets and things like that. So he was married with children. I don't know his wife's name, unfortunately. So you're going to probably wonder what his wife's name is. I don't know.
Well, just those finer details are just not there.
Correct. That's going to be kind of a prevailing theme, but I got the whole story here. But he was pretty well known locally because all the different businesses he was in. So just because he was pretty wealthy doesn't mean that he didn't have some demons. Sounds like Zhang gambled quite a bit. So even though gambling is illegal in China, outside of Macau. So I don't know if you've heard of Macau.
No, of course, I've never been to China.
No,
I haven't.
Really?
You didn't know that about me?
No, yeah.
Oh,
we've been married 20 years. But,
I've never been to China. And also, I'm one of those people that, geographically speaking, unless I've been somewhere, I'm not very good.
Well, there's a lot of countries named here. I'm like, oh, man, this is going to get pretty deep.
But when I do research, I do always look it up on the map just so I know what I'm talking about and where I'm at.
Yeah.
That's helpful. Okay. So you're saying what was the city's name?
So he gambles a lot in China. And China's, you know, a communist country, a dictator. It's very, you know, strict.
So nowhere in the country is gambling legal.
Correct.
Yet somehow he's able to do it.
Right. Through these underground casinos and such.
Got it.
And outside of Macau, a quick little side note. Macau is four times bigger than Las Vegas. So everybody thinks Las Vegas is the center of gambling here in the Western world, and it absolutely is.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I missed this. Macau is a city in China?
Yes. It's just something I thought it was interesting that Macau is four times bigger than...
But there's no gambling in Macau.
Only in Macau, but he's not in Macau.
Only in Macau, and it's in China, though.
Yes.
Oh, interesting that they allow it in that one city.
It's kind of like, remember 10, 15 years ago when gambling was only allowed in Vegas in the United States?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, so, okay. So now that I got my quick little fact out of the way, Zhang gambled at a lot of these, like I said, underground casinos, and like every single gambler, he lost more than he won.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you have somebody that you know that says they do really well gambling, they just don't tell you about their losses.
Of course. People are on the highs with the wins, and then they keep those lows to themselves.
Right. And now,
no one's going around saying, I lost $300 last night.
Right. Now, let's say you like win a huge jackpot, and it's like, okay, you won $5 million, and you're probably going to be up gambling for your whole life. But I mean, 99% of people, that's the reason these casinos exist. I mean, you're playing a game actively that is against you. And the longer you play, the more money you're going to give back. That's how it works. So yeah, he was into these all these casinos, and you know, as he gambled more and more, eventually he met a man from Wenzhou, China. That's a city in China, named Hu Fengquan. So I'm going to be talking about Hu.
Okay.
Okay. Hu was born July 16th, 1962, making him 59 today, almost 60. And Hu was well known for those people looking for private financing outside of financial institutions like banking and traditional loan systems. So you could say he was a loan shark.
Mm-hmm.
So usually what a loan shark does is offer you money at a huge interest rate and tries to make a shitload of money off of you. And, you know, your takes advantage of your demons, basically, and you know, keeps you in a severe amount of debt.
So somebody who's looking for somebody like a loan shark, they're in need for quick cash?
Correct.
Okay.
And they don't want to put it down against, like, their house or something like that. But okay. This is kind of worse because these types of guys come after you and break your legs.
Yeah. Not on a legal sense. They're going to come and get you.
Yeah. And we've talked about in China the gangs and stuff, and it's pretty serious business here. So, you know, he was racking up quite a bill, and he's like, you know, I met this guy. The guy's like, yeah, you know, I'll forward you some money. No problem, man. You know, gets really friendly with him, makes it seem like it no big deal, and, yeah, gets into some trouble here. So, Hu was well known for those people looking for private financing. So, you know, someone, like I said, who lends money at a high interest rate, who is also well known by law enforcement, because this isn't a typical activity that's, you know, looked at very, very nicely in China. He was well connected, very charismatic, which ultimately helped him to become pretty well off financially, as you can imagine. So usually these guys that are involved in a lot of these different schemes and things, they do pretty well until they get caught. So in the year 2000, Hu founded an investment and financing company, but to nobody's surprise, it was just a front for a loan sharking business.
Mm-hmm.
You got to, you know, money launder that money somehow. So right. Once it goes through taxes, you pay everything, it's kind of clean after that. He also had a hand in running some of these underground illegal casinos. Big surprise there. Not a lot of good things around this guy. Just seems like pretty much anything he touches is illegal, or he's shiesty, or, you know.
Bottom line, he's looking to make cash. However he's going to do it, he's going to do it.
Correct.
Legal or not.
Yep. So I wasn't surprised to find out that Hu had a criminal history.
Mm-hmm.
As you can imagine, things like illegal firearm charges, fighting, resulting all together in about 9 years spent in prison. In the 80s and 90s, Hu was a snakehead.
Okay.
A snakehead's a person that helps smuggle people from poorer countries into richer countries. So people that were looking to get out of China, he'd help them somehow find a way out because, you know, a lot of times it's hard. China doesn't want to let you out. They want to, you know, keep you in there. So he'd help them smuggle them from China to Western Europe and other wealthier Asian countries. So you have enough money, you can get out. Just a matter of finding a guy like Hu.
Right.
Because of this, Hu traveled quite a bit, because it would help his business as a snakehead to be able to know different countries and get to know their laws and ways around things and get to know contacts and all those different kind of things. So he traveled to countries like Vietnam, Thailand, Malaysia, the kind of guy that wanted to find loopholes. Just any way he can take an advantage of something and make some money in something, Hu was the guy to try to figure it out. Okay. So when Zheng met Hu took an immediate interest in this new client.
Well, he saw dollar signs.
Yeah, smells blood in the water, basically. Mm-hmm. He's like, all right, this guy's a sucker. Here he comes. Because he recognized Zhang's gambling addiction and deep pockets. So he wanted to make as much money off him as he could.
And you're finding people who are, you know, in a desperate situation.
Yeah, absolutely. They don't want to tell their wives, you know, all these. I picture Chinese businessmen, you know, in these underground casinos having a great time, and all of a sudden they look and they're down $1 million or whatever. Yeah,
and it's like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
I'm desperate.
Unfortunately, with gamblers, a lot of time it's like, well, I'll just double the money on this one and I'll make it back.
Right.
And sometimes you do, and then you're like, oh, sweet. And then you remember that time where you made it back, and then the next time you go in again, it's like, oh, I'll just get it next time. And now they're down $2 million.
Yeah, it's a nightmare situation.
Yeah. So never gamble anything more than you're completely okay with losing. Mm-hmm. Like, gambling's not a way to make money. And there's some professionals out there, but, you know, by and large, it's not the way to do it. Just like any addiction, you know. So, from 2010 to 2012, Hu loaned Zheng a total of 26.5 million yuan.
Holy cow.
That's the Chinese currency, which learned.
Okay.
I was like, is that yen? It's like, yen is in Japan and yuan is China.
Okay.
Which I had no idea, and I'm a complete moron.
Well, I would like to go, you know, that's the beauty of traveling, is you get to know these things, mm-hmm. and how other people live and, you know, but we've never been, so.
Yeah, so.
So what does that translate to in our dollar?
That is, right now, about $4 million.
Ooh, wow.
So, quite a big chunk of change there. So he wanted to loan him the money to try to help win back the gambling losses. And so
what
he,
a nice guy.
Yeah, yeah, super nice. Who was confident that Zheng would pay him, because he knew that if he didn't pay, there'd be serious repercussions.
Yeah.
So on June 10th, 2012, Zheng was on a business trip to Hangzhou, which is near Shanghai. Okay. And somehow Hu found out about this business trip. So Hu asked Zheng if they could meet up and, you know, take care of this little debt that he has. So at this point, he was kind of avoiding him a little bit. And he's like, holy shit, I owe him 4 million bucks or, you know, 26 million yuan. And I'll pay him eventually. I just need to gather the money here. But Hu found out that he was traveling. So he's like, hey, how about we meet up? And Zheng, of course, is like, okay, yeah, we'll meet up. Sounds good. So Zheng agreed on a meetup at his hotel where he was staying. And was prepared to give Hu some bad news, saying that he had to delay his payment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Hu kind of knew about this a little bit. You know, they're all kind of in the same circles. They talk to the same people. And this Hu guy is pretty sharp.
Now, does Hu have a posse of people that can come and, like, break your legs or whatever it is they do?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. From what I know, just from what you're going to hear, probably about 10 or 12 different people.
Wow.
I mean, probably even more. But yeah, just, you know, very close ones to him. Yeah, like I said, they agreed to meet in the hotel. Zheng also brought some associates and employees with him to the meeting, just to not be by himself, probably for protection purposes.
Yeah.
Hard to hurt a guy with multiple people and witnesses watching him.
And they're in the middle of a hotel.
Absolutely. So he thought, he was okay, well, I'll meet with him and I'll tell him, and you know, I'm sure it'll be fine, and we'll figure it out some other time. Well, who's been through this before, right? And this isn't his first rodeo. Hu arrived at the hotel, and he requested to speak to Zheng alone. He's like, no, we're not meeting in a group here. It's just me and you, buddy. This is your debt. We're not going to handle this with your associates. So Zheng wasn't looking to meet Hu alone, so he declined. He's like, no, I really just want to meet here with my associates, and I think that'll go better. Hu's like, absolutely not. This is not your choice. This is, you owe me a lot of money. We're not doing this. He pissed him off. He got really, really livid. He's like, no, we're meeting together. And in fact, we're not meeting at your hotel anymore. We're going to meet at my hotel.
Yeah.
And if you don't show up, it's going to be bad news for you.
In a very private area of his hotel.
Correct. So this obviously makes Zheng's associates nervous. They're like, you're going to go? He's like, I have to. I don't want him to hurt my family or anything. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, at this point, anything's possible.
It's a scary situation.
Yep. So the associates were so intimidated by Zheng, and so was... Zheng ended up agreeing on a one-on-one meeting with Hu and left his hotel, meeting Hu at the Wyndham Hotel in Hangzhou, which is one of the best, most luxurious hotels in Hangzhou. Well, you can probably guess where this is heading.
It's not heading in a good direction.
No, absolutely not. Zheng's associates were worried for him, and they waited for him to come back to the hotel and tell them how the meeting went. They waited and waited and waited.
And he never came back.
Nope. Several hours, nobody heard from Zheng at all. At 11 p.m., one of the associates got a phone call from Zheng's wife. So this isn't the one you want to receive here. She was sobbing, crying, barely able to put together any words. Like, they couldn't really even get her to speak. She cried, and she was like, what? What? And she couldn't, you know, just absolutely losing it at this point. Eventually, they got her to calm down a little bit, and she informed the associates that she got a call from a man who claimed to have kidnapped her husband, Zheng, and locked him up, quote, unquote, locked him up. They were demanding a ransom of 50 million yuan if they ever wanted to see him alive again.
So they upped the ante to 50. It's like, I didn't have 26.5. How am I going to come up with 50?
Yeah, well, I guess you figure desperate times, you know?
Yeah, but you can't create money.
Yeah, and, you know, I read a book about negotiating with terrorists. Usually they start really high. And okay. You can get them really, really low if you try. It's called Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. I actually read it because it's good for sales and things, mm-hmm. too, for negotiation purposes.
But it's like, if somebody asked me for $4 million to save your life, I don't have $4 million.
What? You wouldn't be able to come up with it?
I could go do a GoFundMe, perhaps.
Yeah,
we'd
get a good $5,000.
Last time I checked, I don't have gold eggs lying around the house.
Right, and most people don't either. But he figured that, you know, that Zheng had enough business associates and
to
things.
To get it from people.
Right, right. So, let's see here. So yeah, if they ever wanted to see him alive again, 50 million yuan, which comes out to about 7.4 million okay. US dollars right now. And that included all the interest. So if he would eventually pay it off in one fell swoop, you know, that eventually that's what he would end up paying because the interest rates are super high. So obviously, Zheng's associates are absolutely freaked out. They're not sure what to do. I mean, they're just there. They're his business associates. They're not like his family and stuff. They're like, what the hell are we supposed to do? Like, our boss, basically, or, you know, this guy we work with is kidnapped. And if we go to the police, then we get reported, and then maybe they come looking for us. And, you know,
well, you're putting a target on yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're like talking to each other, basically like, I don't know, we're going to let his wife take care of it, or should we do something about it? Or, you know, it's a tough situation to be in. The next day, June 11th, and I think in the morning, one of Zhang's associates named Lee filed a police report.
Okay.
Initially, the police didn't take a big interest in the case, which kind of surprised me. I'm like, what? Does it like happen a lot, these kind of situations? I mean, it's got to be a pretty bad situation if this happens a lot there. They said, well, you know, these private lending disputes happen a lot, especially between business associates. And they're like, well, it'll get figured out. And they're
private
like,
lending disputes?
Well, yeah.
This is like a hostage situation.
Yeah. And eventually, I guess they didn't know that yet. So they're like, well, no, this is a hostage. They took him. They called his wife and said, we're holding him for ransom. They're like, oh, that's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So initially, I'm like, what? This happens a lot? I'm like, oh, okay. They didn't know about the ransom part. So thankfully, they heard about the ransom requests and that the person has who, or that the person that has it might be who, and they know who.
Yeah, because clearly this happens. Yeah. Like, this is not their first time they've done this, right. I'm sure.
No, absolutely not. So this got them to take it more seriously, and they made the case a priority immediately. So they immediately dispatched an officer to the Wyndham Hotel in Hangzhou,
mm-hmm.
where
the meetup was.
Yep, where Zhang got taken. Which happened to be, like I said, one of the nicest hotels in the area. And because it was so nice, police knew they'd have a good chance of finding Zhang and Hu on the security cameras.
Sure.
At least being able to see what's been going on.
Who knows that, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's not stupid.
It's not like, oh, this hotel that I bring my people to has security cameras?
I'm so surprised.
I had no idea.
Right. Sure enough, police reviewed the tapes and found that Zhang and Hu entered the hotel at about 6:30 p.m. the prior evening. Then, about an hour later, both of them left the hotel in a hurry.
Okay. So we don't know where he took him.
No. Getting into a different vehicle from the one they arrived in. So there was some kind of plan here.
Of course. They're not stupid.
Right. This guy, who knows exactly what he's doing. There's not a ton of detail around the initial police search, as far as like how they got some initial answers and things. But you know, there's definitely some details on you know, further in. But while the police were following leads and doing all that kind of stuff in their initial search to find Zhang, his wife, as you can imagine, was an absolute mess.
Oh, of course, that'd be horrible.
Yeah, living in like depression, despair, anxiety, like just had no idea where her husband was. Knew that he was held, and
what's happening to him? Is he being tortured?
Right.
Now, let me ask you this. Did they put a time limit on when they needed this money by?
I'm sure they did. They didn't say exactly, but that's always the case.
In the meantime, is she trying to get this money?
Yes, and that's part of her anxiety. It's all on her to try to get this money.
Oh, that's
here,
so scary.
That they just don't have. So in the meantime, while this is happening, she receives several phone calls from her husband's captors. And every time she requested to speak to Zhang to make sure he was still alive.
Yeah.
She said that she would try to say some comforting words and be like, it's okay. Like, we're going to try to get it together. We're doing everything we can. Stay strong. And she would often hear him have these pain-filled gasps and please help and all that kind of stuff.
So we don't even know if he's like on the brink of death at this point.
Right. There was some kind of, you got to think there's some kind of torture going on.
Of course.
They want him to be in pain and to express that through the phone so that they're more likely to get this money.
Poor woman, poor guy.
Yep. And then in early August, the family received a call from Hu when he put Zhang on the phone, who sounded like he was in terrible pain, like worse than normal. You know, basically just like at the end of his rope here. And he was begging his wife to save him and pay his ransom.
Oh, Jesus. And at this point, we're going into close to a month.
Yeah.
Are they feeding him? You know what I'm saying? Or is he being starved to death?
Yep. I mean, I'm sure they're treating him like absolute crap, right? I mean, they're not going to give him the 5-star hotel meals and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, there's not a lot of evidence either way, because I'll talk more about it a little bit later. But he was also a diabetic, too.
Oh, so Jesus.
It was important to make sure that he
was getting his medicine.
Yep, took his meds and all that good stuff. Like you mentioned, you asked, you know, was she trying to get money together? I said, yes, she was trying everything she could. She sold off all the properties that her and Zhang managed together and borrowed money from everybody she could think of, friends, relatives, business contacts, and tried to meet the demands of the kidnappers and try to pay off the husband's huge gambling debt. Zhang's wife lost over 70 pounds during this ordeal.
I don't doubt it.
I'm not sure what she weighed to start. If she was 400 pounds, that's not as big of a deal if she was, a 150-pound woman or 200 or whatever.
But it just goes to show the amount of stress that she was under.
Yep, all the worry and fear is definitely taking its toll. She's probably not eating because she can't think of anything else outside of, okay, who else can I call? Who else can I...
Oh, I'm sure she's not sleeping. She's, probably sick. And then she's got children, too, you mentioned.
Right. So her whole world's flipped upside down, and it's all on her. It's a lot of pressure. After turning over every rock she could, she managed to scrounge together about 6 million yuan.
Okay. So, 6 million out of... 50?
Yes.
Oh, shoot.
So 6 million yuan is about $1 million in the US dollars.
Okay, so we're a good 6.5 million short here.
Yeah. Yeah, quite short. So she deposited the money just kind of as a goodwill, being like, hey, I've got this together so far. I'm still working on it. I don't know if I can get much more. Like, this is kind of me tapped out here, selling everything we own. And so that's just how much debt this guy was in. He was in, like, more than his net worth. That when you're gambling and you're more than your net worth, that obviously, he's a smart guy, Zhang, I'm sure. He never thought that it would get to this. You think eventually you'll get on a heater and you'll get the money back.
Well, like you said, it's an addiction, and you just a little bit more, just a little bit more. And then before you know it, the tank is empty.
Right. And you're negative.
And you're in a hole.
Yeah. You can't fill up your car because you don't have enough money to
dug a hole
to pay for what you've already used. Yeah. So,
was this all a surprise to his wife? Did she know the extent of his gambling and their debt?
Every culture is different.
Right.
So I don't know. They don't talk about that a lot.
Every culture is different, but even in America, a wife could be surprised and shocked by the extent of her husband's debt, not knowing what kind of gambling he's into.
And she may have thought that he was just going on business meetings and hanging out with his associates and whatever and not gambling the whole time. I'm sure she had to know that he was gambling.
Right. I mean, I don't know how, the husband and wife relationships are typically over in China, like what they share.
Yeah.
Or is it like, no, a woman doesn't need to know type of situation?
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of getting the feeling. Kind of like your husband takes care of things.
Yeah, let him you do what don't ask questions.
Correct. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, during this time, police continued their manhunt for Hu. And this is the guy you got to find.
I mean, this can't be the first time they've been on the hunt for Hu.
No, and this isn't the first time Hu's been on the run from police either.
I don't understand how this guy is not in prison.
There's a lot of things going on in China. Yeah, I mean, like a lot of places. We talked about, the Yakuza and all that stuff. I'm sure, they don't mention that at all. But there's, if you know enough people, there's a lot of bribery and there's a lot of things going on. It's, if you pay somebody enough money, then a
it
lot
just
of times,
goes away.
Yeah, things can be forgotten about.
Uh-huh.
So, there's corruption everywhere. It's tough. I don't know.
Because they're actively using police resources to find this guy.
Yeah, a lot of them. And I'll tell you more about it. They had leads claiming to have seen him in his home in Wenzhou, China. But after investigating, police turned up nothing. Like, they had leads saying, oh, we saw him here, and they were looking everywhere. I mean, there's, like you said, a lot of resources going into this.
And there's no way the guy's going to his house. I'm sure the house is being staked out 24/7.
Yeah, that's probably...
Oh, I'm just going to run home and grab that shirt I really like.
Right. Forgot my shaving cream.
Yeah.
yeah, so they were watching that. Eventually, it was found that during this time, Hu would change his location and where he was holding Zhang over 80 times while the police were looking for him.
Yeah, because anytime they were sniffing him out, he's relocating.
Yeah, 80 times. That's a lot. That's not five or six or a dozen, like 80 times. And that's smart.
But it goes to show how many people he knows.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like you can just show up to a hotel with a guy with like a bag over his head or something like that tied up.
Well, and using your credit card. And
yeah.
Yeah, you can't be using your credit card. You got to be off the grid.
So these are people that are just letting him come and stay.
Yeah, and that's he's well known.
He's infiltrated in this country.
Oh, absolutely. And as those leads continued to dry up, police focused on finding contacts within Hu's inner circle. This was the right step because police found enough evidence to make an arrest. The account that the money was transferred into was held by Zhang's. Oh, the account that Zhang's wife transferred the money into belonged to Hu's wife.
Okay, so this, tell me again the number. Was it one?
About $1 million.
$1 million, okay.
A little less. But.
So it went to whose account?
Whose
wife's account.
Correct.
Okay.
So they're like, okay, we got this. We're going to go at least arrest her because she's...
Maybe she doesn't even know anything.
Well, on August 10th and August 16th, two different days, police raided multiple places and ended up arresting Hu's wife, along with a couple of other accomplices. whose wife denied any involvement, and the other men refused to speak. So they know that they're going to get in trouble if they do.
Of course.
They know the deal here. Whose wife also showed a divorce document proving that the couple had divorced in early June of 2012, just days before Zhang's kidnapping.
Okay. So is this all like purposeful or is it actual?
Well, who's a smart guy? So, I think that they actually meant to get divorced.
Okay.
But
so he timed it at this point.
Yeah. Who happened to transfer all of his properties to his ex-wife's name.
Interesting.
Right at this time.
You wouldn't think you would do that.
Right. So he was definitely thinking ahead before committing the kidnapping. He knew he was going to take Zhang here, and he knew that these things are going to be traced.
Mm-hmm.
And he traced, you know, transferred everything into his ex-wife's name. Unfortunately, Hu's wife's story of having no involvement wasn't completely true, because police found security camera footage of her depositing the ransom money into another one of her accounts.
Okay, so it wasn't just done under her note, like where she didn't know it.
Yeah, which they believed it at first. They're like, this is, yeah, I could see it. You got divorced and maybe he's, you know, he's a shiesty, hard guy to figure out here.
But then again, they could have called her and been like, you're depositing this money. Don't ask a single question about it.
Right.
So she might not know a thing.
Right.
And just like, you're doing this.
Yep. But they do have that camera, so they got enough to be able to arrest
her. Sure, she's connected.
Yep. So while searching for other connections to Hu, police found his lover, Dai Mao, and kept 24-hour surveillance of her residence.
Okay.
In October, police learned that Dai had disappeared.
Oh. Mm-hmm. When did she disappear?
October.
October, okay.
After searching phone records, they found that Dai and Hu had a phone conversation discussing plans to leave the country.
Okay.
Which is no surprise. Hu had already taken off. He was in Vietnam. As we mentioned, he knew all these different countries and had plenty of contacts in all of them because of his snakehead experience. And police later found out Dai was in Western Europe. So they weren't together. They were apart at this point. This is why police had such a hard time finding anything about Hu. They were looking in China, and he wasn't even in China.
Do we know when he left?
No.
Now, does he have a new identity in Vietnam? Like a different name?
You would think so, right? You'd think different IDs and stuff.
Oh, yeah. If this guy knows people, they can create a whole new identity for him.
Yeah. And now maybe he's using the same name. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of detail around that. But I'll get to a point where you'll see it kind of is a little head scratcher here. But the Chinese authorities, once they figured out that he was traveling all around these different countries, they worked with Interpol to issue a red notice, which is a request to worldwide law enforcement to arrest a certain suspect and ship them back to the country that is looking for the suspect.
Which is why you would think he would have a different identity there.
Right, because it's like, well, I'm Hu, and here I'm, you know, presenting my records. And it's like, oh,
boom, we need you.
Yeah, you're on this red notice here. Yes. Sorry, buddy, you're not going anywhere.
Exactly, you're going straight back to China.
Right, now this is only with the countries that work with Interpol.
Okay, now Vietnam does, though, correct?
It doesn't sound like it.
Okay, got it. So he knows this too.
Well, we'll find out.
Okay.
We don't know for sure. While searching for other connections to Hu, police found his... Oh, wait, I already said that. So Hu was able to find a way into Vietnam, like I said, because of his experience as a snakehead, smuggling people into different countries and all that kind of stuff. Eventually, Hu left Vietnam. And this is why I'm saying I don't think Vietnam has anything to do with Interpol.
Okay.
And maybe he was using different identities and things, but he made it in... through Iran into Turkey.
Oh.
So he went Vietnam, Iran, Turkey. And eventually he planned to make it through Turkey into Europe, which could give him right to Greece or Bulgaria.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Where in Europe does he have his eyes set on?
Yeah. So once you get into Europe, it's kind of like open season.
Right.
Like, you know, you can travel all around.
Well, you can be in any country.
Exactly. So he's just trying to get into Europe somehow. He was stopped while in Turkey.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. And that's why I'm just still stuck on the fact that he's using his actual name.
Right. So this is what I thought about this part. He was only a few hundred feet away from the Greek-Bulgarian border.
Wow.
He was detained by the Turkish Border Patrol. They informed Hu of the Interpol red notice. And Hu was like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. Obviously. I mean, the guy lies for a living.
Of course.
You know, they said that he didn't know. And maybe he didn't. I don't know. But you'd think a few of his associates would be like, there's a red notice for you, buddy.
Yes, you would absolutely think that.
But at the same time, you'd also think that he was using a fake ID. So he was obviously, maybe they identified him somehow through something. I don't know. But
maybe he wasn't as smart as we're giving him credit for. But you would think in order to keep this thing going, you'd have to be.
So maybe he did not know about the red notice and he was just trying to get through each border.
Okay.
And he knew once he was getting into Europe that he'd be home free. But
yeah.
Thank goodness the Chinese police figured out we need to get this going here. So now the other thing Yeah, they informed him there's the red notice, and he seemed unaware, but they set him up for deportation back to China.
Right.
They're like, okay, well, we're sending you back. Hu thought quickly and made a fuss, like, I'm not from mainland China. I am from Hong Kong. Like, do not send me back to China. I'm not going to China. Send me to Hong Kong. Which, so the Turkish authorities that repatriated Hu to Hong Kong. Yeah, just listen to him, which I don't know why.
Why in the hell? Oh, you don't want to go back there?
Right.
You want to go to Hong Kong? Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah, sure.
I don't
know. I'm sorry, sir. You don't have a choice here. This is where you're going.
And now there's a strife between Hong Kong and China. I'll explain it a little bit here, but you know, maybe the Turkish people like knew that Hong Kong didn't want to be considered part of China, and he was acting like, no, I'm not Chinese. I'm from Hong Kong.
Yeah, and you're also a liar and a criminal.
Right. So you would think they would just follow the documents and the instructions.
Not
and
this back criminal.
To China. Right. But somehow he talked them into sending him to Hong Kong. But you wouldn't think this would be a big deal because Hong Kong is technically part of China, but the relationship between China and Hong Kong is weird. So technically, Hong Kong exists as a special administrative region controlled by the People's Republic of China. And because of that, they enjoy their own limited autonomy defined by the basic law.
So they're kind of their own entity.
Yeah. So the way it feels is China views Hong Kong as part of China, but Hong Kong views themselves as independent.
Okay.
And China's been trying to like fight to become like make Hong Kong part of them because it's such a big business center.
Right.
Whereas Hong Kong's like, nope, we are our own people. And like, you might hear in a few years that China just overtook Hong Kong.
Right. It's but as of right now, it's not the case.
Right. So he was smart. Just get in and somehow, I mean,
there had to have been some sort of, there's no way these guys were just like, oh, okay, Hu, sure, we'll just send you on over to Hong Kong.
Well,
there had to have been something else there that caused them to do that.
Right. You would think there's some kind of paperwork.
Yeah,
that
paperwork.
He's like, no, see, look, I'm from Hong Kong.
Yeah, I don't know. That's strange.
Yeah. And maybe that was his plan the whole time. If he ever got caught, just get to Hong Kong. So, yeah, he got into Hong Kong and they're independent. So, because of this relationship, Hong Kong doesn't have an extradition treaty with mainland China.
Of course not.
And they also have their own separate police force, like everything separate. It's kind of like going to a separate country.
Yeah.
Even though it's part of China, it's really weird.
You know what it reminds me of is this whole Disney business that's happening here in Florida. Hmm. How like Disney kind of has its own.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like its own country, basically, within Florida. They don't pay their taxes and whatever. And yeah, it's its own thing.
Yeah, it just, I know that's not the same comparison, but it's just what popped into my head.
Sure. No, that sounds
good. I'll shut up now. Yeah, you go.
China's basically Disneyland.
It's
Disney
like
World.
Disney. Yeah, you know, Hong Kong's like Disney.
People think
they
Disney
do.
World,
don't
Hong
they
Kong?
Have Disney in Hong Kong? I think so.
Well, somewhere. China. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe just Japan.
Ignore the hell out of me.
Yeah, if you could stop talking, that'd be a big
just
help.
Shut up.
To my story, if you could just stop talking about it, I'll let you know what's going on here, okay, Allison? Now, you just think of Disney World and all those princesses, and I'll get back to the story here. Anyways, folks. So, yeah, because of the weird relationship, he was kind of safe in Hong Kong.
I was just going to say, he's safe there.
Yeah. Unfortunately for Hu, the Turkish border agents seized all his assets. So he had no money or any resources, which is kind of nice as a border patrol. You get to keep all the money. It's a bonus.
Huh.
They're just, I mean, for, you know, intelligence purposes and whatever, but I'm sure they pocketed, you know.
But then again, his ex-wife has, like, all these things in her name. They've got to be working together.
Well,
like,
he's got contacts and stuff.
I mean, so there's no way this guy is without money.
Well, at first, he was kind of in a pickle.
Okay.
So he had to call in a special favor. He contacted his friend, Ma Zhai, and requested him to wire some money.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm saying. He's got these contacts that he's not going to be living on the streets eating from a dumpster.
No. Absolutely not. So his friend obliged, but Chinese authorities were all over it.
Okay.
They were following every associate that he had. Yeah. So, I mean, great job to the Chinese police here.
That's very detailed work.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't feel like this would have been necessarily done as well in the United States. Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe
not. Depends. Yeah, maybe if the CIA and FBI got involved, it would
be. Yeah, exactly.
And they quickly arrested Ma Zhai while recording the location of where the money was sent to Hu.
Was it illegal for him to send him money?
Probably because he's a convict or an escape person, a person of interest.
Okay.
So, and I'm sure they probably got him on some other stuff too.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's
associated with this guy. I'm sure his hands aren't crystal clear.
They're like, okay, we've got a list of things to charge you with here. We're going to go with this one.
Yeah.
I'm sure they found illegal something in his property. So, in February 2013, the Chinese police discovered Hu was hiding out in Thailand.
Okay.
So he got out of Hong Kong and went over to Thailand. Basically he was free again. So when they found out he was in Thailand on February 26th, they sent six police officers from Hangzhou over to Thailand to meet up with the Royal Thai Police to try to apprehend Hu. And they all raided a luxury hotel room in Bangkok, where they finally nailed down Hu.
And where is Chong? How do you say his name? Jong?
We'll find out.
Okay.
Okay.
This is a long time. Like, we're coming up on a year here.
Yeah. Yeah. No shit. So they found Hu along with his lover, Dai. While this was going down, Chinese police arrested 13 other associates of Hu's in China.
Mm-hmm, just, his thugs.
Yeah, exactly. Just somebody that had anything to do with this stuff. And they're basically trying to bring down everybody and saying, okay, this is enough. It's gone too far. So he was brought to a police station in Thailand for interrogation. And he only admitted to kidnapping Zheng, but claimed to have released him in August once he realized the ransom wasn't even close to what he was looking for to pay off his debt.
Right. He just released him. Sure you did.
He's like, I don't know where Zheng is. I don't know. I let him go.
I just opened the door and let him walk.
Yeah. He's like, oh, you can't pay your debt? Okay. Well, see you later.
But he didn't go home to his family and his desperate wife.
Yeah. Probably to a casino or maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Getting some burgers for a year. Whatever it might be. I'm sure. Yeah. He didn't come home and say, I'm safe. Or yeah. Call his wife or anything like that.
Even though he was last speaking to her, like begging and moaning on the phone.
Yeah. So Hu's accomplices were interrogated separately, as you can imagine. They don't want them in the same room, getting wise and telling the same story here. Most of them were sticking to the same story that Hu had told them. But eventually there were two that cracked and told the same differing story.
Okay.
So these two said the same story that differed from Hu's.
Got it.
So they knew that this was something they could.
What may have happened.
Exactly. They claimed that on August 31st, 2012, after Hu realized Zheng's family couldn't come close to the ransom request, that they were instructed by Hu to construct an iron cage.
Oh my gosh.
They then handcuffed Zheng and forced him into this cage before locking it shut.
Oh.
Now, this cage, I find out, is about 2 by 2 feet cube.
Oh my gosh, what a nightmare.
So at first I pictured kind of like a big like shark cage when you're going into the water and you know.
No, we're talking about like a little like tomb.
Yeah, and Zheng was a standard, you know, 5'10" kind of guy. So basically he had to be in a fetal position to get into this cage.
I'm like feeling short of breath even just thinking about this.
Yeah. So the poor guy's curled up in this cage right now, basically. But when he was, you know, told
put in there.
Yeah, exactly. They then handcuffed Zheng and, like I said, forced him into the cage before locking it shut. Then at nighttime, when few people were around, they drove to the Baijian Bridge.
Oh, no.
And threw the iron cage containing Zheng into the deep waters below.
Oh, that's
could you imagine?
Terrible.
You're stuck in a cage and you can't swim and you're underwater.
No, like, you're just drowned to death.
Like so, my heart's pounding a little harder.
Yeah,
right now.
You're sick about it. But at this point in time, the guy was probably so tortured that he was probably glad to be put out of his misery. Because at this point in time, he had been captive for 2.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, imagine the horror this guy lived through.
And the torture he was already going through, and probably the lack of food and water and things of that nature, and just treated like an absolute animal, basically.
What a nightmare.
Yep. Yeah, so threw him into the waters. So when Hu was informed that his associates confessed this,
mm-hmm.
Hu insisted he had no personal stake in the action and refused to have any involvement whatsoever in
Zheng's death. Okay, dude. These guys are taking your cue.
Well, that's what he's like. He's like, I didn't take him anywhere.
No, but you told them what to do and where to take him.
Well, his story was basically, I didn't tell them anything. They did this all on their own.
Sure.
Like, okay. I mean, it's a convenient thing. And this is definitely, I mean, the problem is that they need proof. So it's like, if he didn't put in an email or text or anything like that.
But don't these guys work for him?
Yes.
They're not doing it. They're going by what he's telling them to do.
Now it's up to these two guys. And if they're believable and reliable and to go against his word.
Right.
And will they do that knowing that they're probably in danger?
Oh, sure. They're going to have to be like on a witness protection program type of deal.
Right. So this is all going on here. In March, after interrogation, the Thai authorities agreed to extradite Hu to China, and Hu was arrested as soon as he landed in mainland China. Now, the biggest problem remaining is finding the cage.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. They'd have to go to where this bridge is and get scuba divers.
Yep. And they needed to find the cage and Zheng's remains so they can properly charge and book Hu and his accomplices.
Ugh.
Unfortunately, the area Zheng was so hastily thrown into the deep water, it fed into the second deepest man-made lake in the world.
Oh my gosh.
And police would have to search hundreds of locations, all hundreds of feet deep. Along with strong currents. So wherever they dropped it, it doesn't mean that it went to the same place.
No.
Like, they have really no idea where it went based on the currents.
And I'm sure they chose this location for that very reason.
Absolutely. I'm sure this isn't the first guy that they took care of this way. Basically an impossible task. They got this whole thing in front of them. They're like, I don't even know. They're trying to find a needle in a haystack, in a gigantic haystack.
Yes.
Basically. The recovery project started in April of 2013. Police invited all the help they can think of. So, I mean, I'm really impressed by the resources the Chinese police did to try to find this guy here. They had members of the science and underwater exploration communities as part of the deal. Like, pretty much anybody they could think of that might be able to help them find something.
They'd have to have, like, a boat going all around with, like, the sonar in all these potential locations.
Yep. So they're bringing a lot of people in. They pulled in a professor from the Department of Mechanical Engineering of Zhejiang University and her whole scientific research team, and they came up empty-handed. They also tried the Second Institute of Oceanography of the State Oceanic Administration and the number 715 Institute of China Shipbuilding Industry Corporation. That's a lot of words.
That's a lot of words.
Probably some very smart people involved at all those words. Still no luck.
Wow.
They're trying anything they could, right? They had to. They had no choice.
Right.
So meanwhile, three court hearings were being held in June, August, and September while they were looking for Zhang's body here, with Hu sticking to his same story, never cracking, having nothing to do with the disappearance of Zhang. It's like, nope, not my problem. Also, the accomplices that confessed to putting Zhang in a cage and throwing him into the water, remember them? They retracted their confessions. Wonder why.
Yeah.
Who's like, you want your family's dead?
Yeah, then keep with the story.
Yeah. And they told police Zhang was, they retracted their confessions. Oh, yeah. And told police Zhang was released, just like Hu claimed.
Sure.
Like, yeah, Hu told us to let him go. So we let him go.
Where did this story about the iron cage come from then?
Right. And it's like, if they would have just stuck with that, they'd probably be in a lot less trouble at this point.
Right.
Hu's like, you idiots. Like, just, they don't have anything. Why would you give them something? At this point, it seemed like things were going backwards. They're like, I can't find the cage. These people are retracting their confessions. Like, things are going the opposite way. In December, December 22nd, officials enlisted the help of the United States with advanced deep water scanning equipment.
Mm-hmm, just like you said, thinking.
Sonar, anything they could do. They created a 3D map of the areas being searched based on sonar and everything, just so they could say, put it into a grid and say, okay, we search this area, yes. Let's focus on this area, hoping that the cage doesn't move in the meantime.
That's just the thing. Is it going to settle where it lies?
Yeah, you would think. So they still didn't find the cage.
Ugh.
Finally, they used a very expensive underwater robot named Tiger.
Wow.
They had visibility of about 2 meters in these waters, so 6 feet. They set up a detailed search grid of about 5 foot like grid. So a very, very, very small grid, like, and very detailed to search every single section. Eventually, first they had a kind of a big, grid. Now it's like very 5 foot grid, basically, between these two, all these different lines that they're making. So Tiger, lo and behold, it paid off. On the afternoon of December 28th, 2014, Tiger located the cage.
Wow.
In a ditch about 250 feet deep with human remains inside.
Unbelievable.
Like, these people were dedicated and they were hell-bent on finding it.
Well, because if they don't, this is going to be an ongoing problem.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't an isolated incident.
Well, how many stories, we've even done some stories where it's like, well, a car went into the water and they couldn't find it in
right.
a lake.
I mean, we're talking about potential for X places where this current could have taken it.
Right. So
and they were able to find it. That's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, we've done a lot of stories where it's like, no, they couldn't find it. And
it sounds like they absolutely exhausted the resources in order to do this.
Yeah. And some very dedicated people, too. Like, I'm very impressed by the community that came together for this. So.
And the fact, now, this Tiger robot, this was owned by the United States?
No, this Tiger robot was somebody in Asia.
Okay.
I had his name, but, I left out a lot of names because it was hard to pronounce it.
Yeah, no worries. I just didn't know if it came from the U.S. or not.
Yep. Nope, this one was from somewhere in Asia. But I was just mentioning the U.S. because they pulled every resource they could. So as police pulled the iron cage up from the bottom, they had to be very, very careful. Because this thing's been in there for 2.5 years at this point. Like, that's how long the search went on.
Crazy.
Insane. So the iron was starting to rust away and the lock was broken. The door to the thing was open. The robot found it. So they're like, man, as we're pulling this up here, I mean, the remains could be falling out.
If it's not already swept away.
Yeah. I mean, the robot did see that there's remains.
Okay.
In there. So they knew that there's something in there.
Okay.
Okay. So, so after 2.5 years of being down there, super rusty, luckily everything came up in one piece and they retrieved everything that they were hoping to. The cage, like I said, was basically a 2x2 foot cube, maybe 2x3, 2.5, something like that. Very small. So like we said, they found him crammed into the small cage in the fetal position. Due to decomposition, almost none of the body could be used for an autopsy. You know, 2.5 years underwater. Right. But luckily, DNA tests did confirm this was the body of Zhang.
Oh, it's so sad.
Yep.
I'm just glad they found him.
Yep. After all these years of searching, the dedication... Oh, maybe it was 1.5 years. I'm sorry.
It was 2014 and he was disappearing. And, was it 2013 that he...
Yeah. I don't know.
Actually, wasn't it August 31st, 2020 or 2012 that he was put in this cage and put over the bridge? So we were looking at more than 2 years.
Okay. So, 2.5 years of searching and all the dedicated people that moved to this nearby mountain village. So there was ended up people that moved to try to help find him. And they lived there for 28 months.
Unbelievable.
Away from their families, away from their friends. And these people lived there to try to dedicated to finding it. And this was huge news, obviously. You know, if your family and everything is over, somebody from your family is over trying to find this guy. It's like, I mean, this was huge news in China. And finally, Zhang's family had some closure.
Thank goodness. And all that hard work paid off that they found what they were looking for.
Yep, exactly. In court, six of Hu's accomplices pled guilty to lesser charges of having no direct involvement with Zhang's death, but still had some involvement.
Right.
Hu's trial started on February 11th, 2015. Hu still clung to the story of having no direct involvement. He said, quote, "I was trying to move Zhang Hong to another place. The house I also rented in a North Mountain Bridge drive over a bit of road is a farmhouse for chickens and ducks, but then the car drove to the bridge.
Okay.
I let Zhang Hong go. After that, I do not know where he went."
Uh-huh. He went over the bridge in an iron cage where you instructed your men to do so.
Yeah. We already know this, bud.
Mm-hmm. You can say whatever you want.
So
he's directly tied to you. You walked into the hotel with this man.
Yep. And prosecution replied, "So until this moment, you still insist you have nothing to do with this recovered body, the one that we just found here, and that your associates said you told them to do this."
And the reason why that this man was with him was because he lent him the money.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone was going to put him in this cage and have him put over the bridge, it was you.
You were the one that had interest in this.
You had the interest.
Yep. Whose response was, "Yep, I'm sticking to the same story." So the two accomplices that brought the cage to the bridge changed their tune again. And they said, "We were lucky the body wasn't found before," which is to say that they finally admitted guilt. According to the testimony, Zhang was given a final meal prior to getting thrown into the iron cage and then thrown over the bridge into the deep water. The guys that brought Zhang to the bridge claimed that they were only putting him on the ledge to scare him.
Okay, sure.
Now, the way these guys explained it, it sounded like one guy was really responsible for putting the cage up on the thing, and the other guy went back because his car, he forgot to put the car in park or something, and the car started like rolling. Like, this seems like a kind of a movie. Like, no, they wouldn't be stupid enough not to put this in park. But the story that they both corroborated was that the car started moving. So this guy goes to run after the car, and while he's holding this cage on the edge of the bridge,
it fell.
Yeah, it tips over, and he hears, you know, the guy go running after the car hears a splash and looks back like, holy shit, the cage just fell into the water.
Well, I would imagine it was pretty darn heavy because, Zhang himself must weigh X pounds and then the iron cage has to be heavy.
Yes.
How two men even hoisted it up there, I don't know.
Right. I think two would be quite an effort. Three, I don't know how many it would take. It definitely wouldn't be one guy. And to your point, Hu had an interesting point similar to what you said. He said those two people... One said they did not even touch the cage while the other put it up on the railing. He said Zhang Hong is 200 pounds. The iron cage is also 70 to 80 pounds.
That's exactly what I was wondering. What are we looking at poundage?
Hu said, "I can't lift a person, and especially not a moving person, in a cage. So I simply did not push the iron cage down. I simply released Zhang Hong." So this, they can't get Hu hands on this iron cage. I think it's factual. We all know that Hu wasn't the one to push the cage into the water, but he probably instructed these guys.
He was
so.
The puppet master.
Exactly, which still means you're responsible for it. Nice try. Just because you didn't have your hand on it, your henchmen were afraid of being put to death, basically.
They work for you.
Yes, exactly. So you think exactly like Hu. Congratulations. The prosecutor argued that Zhang was treated terribly, less than a human. and less than an animal when locked in the cage, and pointed out how all involved carefully planned out the crime and where to dispose of the cage. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like this wasn't a random thing. This was planned on this night that was very dark, and you knew exactly what you were doing here.
This whole balancing of the cage and running after the car sounds very unbelievable to me, because I'm picturing this 280-pound cage balancing on a railing. Yeah. By one guy. No way.
Yeah, like, I couldn't do that. I'm a big dude. I'm probably top 90th percentile of larger men in the United States. I'm 6'2", 250 pounds. I would have a really hard time holding a gigantic cage over a railing. Right. Like, I don't get it. And even if a guy moved a little bit, I mean, any kind of momentum would push him right over. Yeah, absolutely. So basically, prosecution also made sure, which thankfully to show the court just how small the cage was in the courtroom. They made a little mock-up of it and everything. And they also made sure to show some video from when the cage was discovered underwater, just to show the remains and be like, this is, really kind of pull it home.
This was a person that was put in this cage and put in the water.
Yep. So basically, Hu's defense team argued that the death wasn't intentional on Hu's part, even though, like we said, like, you were the one that told them all this stuff. Hu's defense also brought up the possibility that Zheng could have been dead before being thrown into the water. Like, at this point, they're just grasping for straws. It's like, they said due to his diabetes.
And the fact that for months he was kept as a prisoner.
Yep. They said they heard no yelling or struggling from Zheng as they were lifting his cage to be thrown into the water, which you would definitely think there'd be fighting or something. But like you said, you haven't been treated well. You haven't been fed. Like, he's probably out of energy here and just in despair and just kind of like, I don't care, whatever. End it.
Yeah. Just basically given up.
Yep. Their argument was that perhaps Zheng didn't get his proper medication in time, but prosecution quickly countered the diabetes story, saying it wouldn't have caused such a short and sudden death. It wouldn't be like, ugh, I'm dead from diabetes.
Right, but you could go into a diabetic coma.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up for you, because you're a dietitian, you would know.
Well, the question is, what kind of medication is he on? Because if he's insulin dependent, it would have been much quicker.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way he would have lasted until August.
Right. So
it all depends. I am assuming he was maybe on just some oral meds to kind of help control it. It wasn't a type 1 diabetes situation where you rely on insulin or you die.
Right. Otherwise, he would have been dead sooner.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay.
So I guess, people were listening to it and seeing that it was a possibility there. But even so, it's like, you had him in a goddamn cage.
Right. And regardless of the fact, this man is dead because of you. Mm-hmm. I don't care how he died. He died because of you.
Right. So on March 16th, 2015, a verdict was in. 7 accomplices were found guilty. 2 of them were acquitted. And Hu was sentenced to death.
Oh, wow.
The accomplice that was responsible for physically placing the cage on the railing was sentenced to death with 2 years reprieve, which means if he had good behavior in jail for 2 years, his sentence would likely be reduced to life in prison rather than death.
Okay.
While the second accomplice, the one that went back for the car as he was driving, he was sentenced to prison, so he got off a little bit easier than the guy that actually brought it up there.
But life in prison?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we don't know for sure. I can't say for sure.
Because, just because he ran after the car?
Right, and didn't have his hand on the cage or whatever.
So. There's no way one man lifted that cage.
Yeah, I don't know. In China, when a death sentence is given, it has to be submitted to a higher court for review and approval. And on December 13th, 2016, Hu was brought to the execution grounds, and he was put to death.
Wow.
Not sure exactly how he was put to death, but likely based on statistics, lethal injection.
Got it.
So this case is very well known in China, where they call it the Iron Cage Corpse Case.
Did you ever see a picture of the cage?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Did it, was it solid iron? Like, did it have any bars. Hole? Oh, it was like bars.
Iron,
okay.
Iron bars. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, that's basically, so sad.
I would imagine they welded it somehow with rebar or something. Like, mm-hmm. Picture like rebar, basically.
Ugh, that's brutal.
Yeah, and you're in this tiny, like, I can't imagine this guy. I'm a poor guy. I mean, this is a great example. There's addictions all over the place, whether it's alcohol or drugs or gambling or something. Like, we tell our kids all the time, too much of anything is not good.
Right, and you're getting yourself involved with these dangerous people.
Absolutely, and I'm sure Zheng never wanted to get it this deep
in. No, of course not. He had a family, he had a wife.
It was about chasing the mm-hmm. possibility of getting it out.
Yes.
You know, if it was me, I'd be like, I don't want to tell you because I don't want you to worry, you know? And I'd be like, okay, just like one more, I'm going to take, you know, one more loan. I'm going to bet it on black on roulette and I'm going to win it back. Please God, and anybody out there, please let me win it so I can just get out of this debt. I'll never gamble again. I promise he made that promise to himself probably, you know, 5 or 10 times.
Right. Cause you're already in it that far. So you just keep going.
Right. So you keep on doubling your bets to try to win your money back. And I hear some people that do that with like sports wagering. It's like, well, I lost like 3 in a row, so I got to put, you know, 2,000 on this one. It's like, no, you don't. You can just like keep on trying to win.
I'm not into gambling at all.
Yeah. Same here. So sad story.
Oh, out of China. Wow.
Yeah. So thanks to Moondog for providing that.
Yeah.
That write-up.
Good research.
I'd read a lot of those resources. They were so hard to read. So
so he compiled them all nice and neat for you.
Yeah. I corroborated a lot of it, but I mean, it was tough. So thanks, buddy. But yeah. And hey, thank you so much for listening here. We appreciate it. You know, I want to put a shout out to our Patreons over here. We got Lily, Karen, Nadine, Allie, Susan, Michael, Kayla F, Kelly, and also a couple others here. We got Colleen, Kayla, Leah, and thank you so much for listening. If you like what you hear, go ahead now. Oh, we got like what, 6 bonus episodes now online. So if you become like a tier 2 or tier 3 member, you get to listen to all of them immediately. So we don't even charge you till the first of the month. You got pretty much a whole month to listen to them. So we might be changing that. Who knows? But yeah, go ahead and Patreon. Go look in the show notes and please become a patron if you'd like to listen. A little bit less banter. So I know some of you people really hate that, but apparently there's a big wig out there.
Feel very strongly about it.
Yeah, but if you can go ahead and give us a 5-star review, and if you have a bad review, go ahead and just keep it to yourself. Maybe tell your mom or something like that. But yeah, we'd appreciate that too. So anything else to add, young lady?
Not at all.
Okay. Well, hey, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate the hell out of you.
And we sure do.
Talk
and
to
have
you next week.
A safe and happy 4th of July if you're here in America.
Amen to that.
All right. Until next time.
Bye.